Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for the Critérium du Dauphiné Stage 5. I can't believe we're already 5 stages in. Cormoranche-sur-Saône to Salins-les-Bains, 191 kilometres. This is how this race develops. It goes from the sort of sprint stages, hilly stages, a TT, and now a medium mountain puncher fest. But it could even be harder than that because the first 90Ks are flat. That makes it difficult for a really punchy break to maybe make it because of form. Then 4Ks, 4%, ridge line, descent at the finish line, then two climbs of note. The Côte d'Ivoire, I don't know how to say ivory in French. The Ivory Hill, 2.2Ks, 5.7%. It's a category 3 with steeper sections in the last little bit. Then a rolling ridgeline, not much flat at all, to be honest, for the Côte de Tézé. 3.7Ks, 8.2%, but the first 2 kilometres also are about 10% average. It's not just a run up and punch for 3 minutes. It's a 9 to 10 minute climb at steep gradient before, again, a false summit, and then a descent, mostly pedaling to the finish, not really much flat to the finish after that climb either. So a very interesting stage design, offering something for a breakaway, for a puncher, and maybe even a GC contender if they have fantastic legs to go on the attack. But you called him to go on the break, Benji, yesterday, and he got in it, one of these riders.
I think you're talking about Thomas de Gendt.
I am.
Because he was in the breakaway. We said that Lotto Soudal should put someone in the breakaway just in case Von Hills wants to go for the stage, then they don't have to chase the breakaway the entire day. Now Von Hills actually abandoned early on in the stage, unfortunately, because he was feeling ill the last couple of days, so that's unfortunate.
That
despite good results while feeling ill, so that guy's got a future, that's for certain. Anyway, together with Degenden in the breakaway, Boasson Hagen, Niels Paulet, Gregaard, Zimmermann, and Heinschke. And if you look at these riders, at least half of those are rulers, and that's what you said when it comes to the parkour, that the initial flat section makes it harder for the punchy breakaway riders to get in the breakaway, for the real climbers to do it. So it's kind of a combination of climbers and rulers, rulers that can climb a tiny bit or that have a history of getting up a hill at some point in their career. So that's what the breakaway is. It goes up to 4 minutes, and one rider or one team that you did not see in the breakaway that we also mentioned as a vital part of the stage is Quickstep, because if they are not in the break, then they're going to be chasing the break, because Alaphilippe is their rider for this stage, and they've got confidence in Alaphilippe after what happened earlier this week with a stage win. So we ended up seeing that. We ended up seeing Quickstep pacing, Bahrain pacing. With that gap at 4 minutes, those were the teams that were really doing the job, with UAE doing stuff to keep the gap in control for the yellow jersey Mikael Bjerg. But it really came down to the famous, the infamous Côte d'Ivoire. Just wanted to say that in a nice way this time around. It's actually confusing, because I gotta agree with you.
Why is it not called Côte d'Ivoire?
Exactly, because Ivory Coast is Côte d'Ivoire.
Yeah. What's going on?
I don't know what the reason is, but it is confusing, I agree, but it's Côte d'Ivoire this time. And the gap is now 1 minute 30 because EF comes to the front. And you kind of spoke about it yesterday. What did you expect EF doing here?
I thought Basque Country, they were quite aggressive. They've been quite aggressive in a lot of races this season, actually. Most of the time it hasn't worked out. It worked out at Mercantour-Albemarle, but at World Tour level, like at Basque Country, they launched Jonas a couple of times, and they came to the front with Andrea Piccolo, actually, and he paced very hard, the young Italian. Too hard for it to be for Sean Quinn. Because if it was for Sean Quinn, you wouldn't pace the climb so hard. You'd pace the valley harder, and then the plateau between Côte d'Ivoire and Côte d'Ivory and the Côte de Tézé, they'd pace there. But they paced the climb really hard, which was clearly then it's Carapaz time. His kit looks sick, I must say. It's nice and colorful. I really like it. His national champs kit. And
I don't.
You don't like it?
It's too many colors. I like the Ecuadorian flag so much, but adding the pink onto it on one side, then a bit of white next to that, I was like, that's a bit much.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he's better than UAE. He's a national champ. Better than Gross Sharten's Austrian champs, kid. Anyway, we can all agree there. But yeah, I was like, they're going to set something up for Carapaz. Now, there's a risk that he, what happens to him is what happened in Basque Country as well. But anyway, they pace that, and then they don't pace the plateau. The break gets another minute, goes out a bit to a minute 11. I think they brought it down pretty close. And then there's a huge fight for positioning. I already said this yesterday. There's no flat between the descent and the start of this climb. So Jumbo's big bad rouleurs get to the front. Christophe Laporte, Nathan van Hooydonk, Dylan van Baarle, Walter initially. And their job was keeping Jonas Vingegaard front and center for that descent, because not only keeping safe for the descent, but this is something, quick maths. On a short climb, say 9 minutes, let's say this climb's 9 minutes, the difference between first position at the base and 50th position is probably 3 seconds, at least 3-4 seconds. And over across a 9 minute climb, that's actually a lot. And so you won't be able to respond to an attack if you're back in that mm-hmm. position. So it's not just for safety. And it also made me think, is Jonas going to try something? Because in Basque Country and Gran Camino, if you've been watching those races, he was super aggressive on similar climbs. And the problem is, Benji, he didn't have a lead out from his team today. Benoit didn't, there was no Volta,
yeah.
Benoit, Kreuzweig super lead out. It was Quickstep who kind of took, Jumbo entered in first position, didn't do anything. Quickstep took the front, and then Bjerk had a problem, poor guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a combination. I'll first handle your first point. The Quickstep coming to the front, it's like what Devin Ayns and Alaphilippe did before, but now with Bajoli taking the spot of Devin Ayns in that two-man operation. And while that is happening, while they move to the front, Mikael Bjerg is crashing in the peloton. They go around this bend, then he hits the floor, and we first didn't see him crashing. We first see him standing still and moving faster again, so something must have happened because he was clearly good enough to start pacing highly again, but that ruined any chance for him to even remotely try to save the Maillot Jaune today. Then again, I think it would have been difficult looking at how difficult the climb was that yeah. came afterwards. But Bajoli's lead out, when he came to the front, I feel like it was too fast because Alaphilippe was not on his wheel, and Bajoli looks behind him and kind of waits before Alaphilippe is on the wheel and then starts pacing again. I think he went to the front a bit too hard for what they were hoping for. But that setup basically meant that we had Quickstep at the front with, I think, Vingegaard nearly isolated in their wheel, and Carapaz nearly isolated in their wheel, right? Because from that point on, the teammates didn't do anything anymore, right?
No, there's no Walter Benoit doing anything. I can't remember if Alaphilippe did get any separation to the Hindley, Landa, Mas, O'Connor, whether it was the trio, but eventually the pace from Bagioli or whoever or Alaphilippe wasn't enough, and Carapaz wanted to go and yep. actually get time back on the other GC guys. And I actually thought when he went, I thought it was actually really smart, because he's so far behind Vingegaard on GC that winning GC is unrealistic. He can maybe win the stage. Vingegaard will probably could collaborate with him, because Vingegaard can take time on O'Connor, who's on 27 seconds, not 2.5 minutes like Carapaz. So it seemed like actually a good duo. But the problem was Carapaz paced, actually made the gap too big too quickly. And the whole time Vingegaard's in his wheel, I was like, bro, do you know who... And Vingegaard is aggressive. He's not just like a... I know, you know, he doesn't have the reputation of Pogacar yet, but we're starting to get there where he's not just going to come over you, give you a nice little turn, and then, yeah. oh, you can win the stage, no worries. He's like, actually, how about I drop you? And that's what happens. He drops Carapaz when he pulls through for the second time, puts him on a big gap, and then really opens up the taps, because the group behind, maybe Carapaz slowed down, Benji, because I swear mm-hmm. the group, who was pacing the group behind? Was it Juanpe for Ciccone?
I would say so, but I feel like when it comes to that collaboration, it was kind of like, we'll start pacing, see what it does, look behind us. It didn't really do much, so let's slow the tempo again. It was kind of reminding me of the pacing group behind Pogacar on Tignes. Does
yeah,
that make
yeah.
any sense? Like, as in, they were trying initially to try and close the gap, but then there were moments where they weren't really trying, and they were looking at each other, and Landa and Haig were looking at each other like, I'm not going to do it. And then other teams didn't have two riders, because when it comes to Bora, the rider that was there was Hindley, right? Because Buchmann wasn't there, right?
No, he wasn't.
So you would expect Buchmann to at least be there, right?
No. Why would you expect Buchmann to be there?
Okay. I don't know. In like a 25-man group, I would hope that Buchmann is still alive.
No.
Not anymore? 5 years ago, maybe?
The 2019 Tour de France has not aged well. Alaphilippe was the same climbing level as these guys for 3 weeks. Anyway, I love Bernal. Bernal was there, which was good. But yeah, it's O'Connor's got no teammate in a group of 30, which is a problem to pace. And because if he paces, it's 8%, and it levels to 7%. But if he paces the whole climb, he risks getting attacked. And people did attack. The team that had numbers were UAE. They had Groschartner hanging on at the back. Micah was there, but probably struggling. And Yates is their best GC rider, but he lost time to Groschartner in the TT yesterday. But if I was them, it'd be all in on Yates. And they got Bjerg behind too, who's trying to come back. So yeah, no one really. Trek, I saw the team the most trying to take it out.
But I feel like UAE was trying as well, because near the top
after the climb.
On top of the climb, I would say.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the descent yet, but Michael was pacing for a bit in the last 500 meters. Then Adam Yates took over himself and kind of had 3 seconds of separation when he did that. But then everybody stormed back to his wheel. But in the descent, Yates can't do this entire descent against the Jonas Vingegaard either. Then I would expect Vingegaard to probably take time on the boy behind, on the man behind in the group behind. And the gap was exploded, like you said. It was up to 36 seconds.
41 seconds at one point. Ooh. On a 9-minute, 10-minute climb. That's a big, big gap. And then there's a plateau afterwards, bit down, but it's still pedaling, big ring. But you think, oh, why wouldn't the group just catch him? Well, Rafał Majka's not going to pedal faster than Jonas Vingegaard on a 3% downhill. So he keeps the gap the same on that section. And then you've got a little kick up. I think Bernal, I'm not sure who attacked. And then there's a pedaling downhill. It's steep enough that you're not going to lose too much time. So without multiple, I mean, Bahrain's the one team that had two guys that would look like they're in pretty good shape, but I don't think they realistically think they can win the race. So why would you chase Vingegaard if first of all, you're not going to win the sprint if you bring him back. Alaphilippe wins. And second of all, Landa shipped 3 minutes yesterday. And hey, you could be happy, I think, with a top five on GC here. So, yeah. Anyway, Vingegaard, he looks super aerodynamic, rides away, wins the stage, kind of Pogacar style, actually, almost seemingly with no competition, made it look easy, but I'm sure it wasn't. I'd like to see the watts on that climb. And yeah, just too good.
Yeah, Vingegaard too good in the stage. But when it comes to those opponents, we said why they wouldn't do what they maybe should do to try and win the race. For example, Landa and Haig, why are they not pacing after Vingegaard? Because they think they're aiming for the podium at this point, because they don't think they can beat Jonas. But that aside, what do you prefer as a fan of the sport versus as a DS of the team? Because as a DS of the team, you'd say, go for the podium. You shouldn't try to follow Vingegaard, because that's an unrealistic thing to do at this point. Or maybe try and follow until you have a calculated moment that you see, I can't follow this tempo. And then set your own tempo from that point onwards. But you wouldn't say keep on pacing with Vingegaard in your wheel, like with Carapaz, for example. But from a fan perspective, I'm like, yeah, Carapaz, come on.
Oh, that was great. Yeah. Well, Carapaz, it was great to watch. But yeah, I think he pulled fish for too long with Jonas in his wheel. You know, pull for a little bit, open the gap up, but eventually he has to relay. I think he put himself fully into the red. And then when Jonas accelerated, he got dropped on the climb by the chasing group. He fully cracked himself. So he didn't pace it very well.
Did he lose time?
No, I think he got back to the group just on the ridge line.
Actually, he lost 14 seconds in the end. Get it with Groschartner.
Oh, wow.
And Godu lost 30 seconds.
I mean, Godu and Rodriguez aren't in good shape here. Danny Martinez also got dropped. Yeah, Danny Martinez also lost a lot of time. But to answer your question, I don't really know. What Bernal did, I quite liked. Attacking the group to gain time. Because, listen, realistically, if he drops you by 30 seconds, Jonas, on a 9-minute climb, what's he going to do on the weekend? So the only way you win this race is if he crashes out. But if he crashes out or gets sick, it doesn't matter if you gave him 30 seconds today or 2 minutes today.
Yeah.
You want to, if you're O'Connor, defend that second position. Maybe something happens to Jonas, but if he's in this shape, you're not going to drop him on the weekend. Like it's going to be even more exaggerated. So I understand completely what the Chase group did, to be honest.
Yeah, when it comes to O'Connor, I do want to add, he had that mechanical in the last kilometer where I was looking at him, I was like, no, let's hope 3 kilometer rule works, but it did. He's also on 31 seconds together with the Alaphilippe group, with Adam Yates group, with the Bernal group and so forth. Bernal, who got called by that group again. But hey, former enemy getting third. Is that shocking?
No, punchies. I mean, he had to be pretty good to beat Vine on Mont Bouquet, yeah, 4K, 10%.
He had a weaker moment there. He had his injury at the end of last season, and I feel like he's had trouble coming back.
Oh, yeah, he's not had the best start to the year compared to maybe Catalunya. He was a little bit better last year. But this terrain really suits him. The longer climbs don't, I don't think yet, and the TT certainly doesn't. But yeah, this sort of climb is actually really, really good for Johannessen, and he actually has a fast sprint in the finish. But yeah, Vingegaard wins by 31 seconds ahead of Alaphilippe. Johannessen third. Champoussin actually fourth. Max Poole fifth is a nice result. Hindley sixth. Mas seventh. Yates eighth. Lenny Martinez ninth with Gaudu dropped. Chavez 10th with Bernal. Haig Ciccone, Juanpe, Landa, Benoit all made that group too. And as Benji said, Carapaz lost an additional 14 seconds, 45 behind Jonas. So his podium's gone, I would say. O'Connor's also on 31. And yeah, Gaudu and Martinez and Buchmann Rodriguez lost 102. Looking down for any other people. Only not a great result. 223. He got properly dropped on this climb.
He got only 43rd.
Yeah.
That was terrible, sorry.
But don't you reckon, like, this is... Didn't I say yes? Did I say something about Groupama letting Geniets in the break today?
I do not remember, man. That's far, far away.
This is why. Not only is it not selfish, because Gaudu doing well at this race after this TT also was completely unrealistic.
Yeah.
If the breakaway is bigger and stronger with more teams wanting to get into it, and the break is going to win the stage, does Carapaz go for it as aggressively? Does Vingegaard go for it as aggressively? Quickstep don't chase. They just put someone in there. And suddenly you have a much easier overall stage with no bonus. The stage win really incentivizes more action. And so, yeah, and then Gaudu loses another minute today. So sometimes having a rider in the break and making sure that break is successful, if you don't feel it suits you that day for your GC guy, it's actually a really good idea. Jumbo did that did they do that last year? No, Wout went in the break on his own and Pog won.
Even if Geniette is in the breakaway and he gets caught on the last climb, he can pace Gaudu back, who is dropped.
Yeah.
So it acts as a satellite rider as well in that scenario. So there's so many reasons why you would want to send a rider in the breakaway, even if you want him to support your GC rider, it helps. So I fully agree with that. There's a small thing that I do want to mention, that Vingegaard stopped his post-stage interview because he said something about the unfortunate event in Annecy today, where someone did something horrible. I'll leave it to that. And he said that his thoughts were with the families. And basically stopped the TV interview. So I think that's a very classy thing to do from Jonas.
Yeah, he's obviously very family oriented. And yeah, that's terrible. I hadn't heard about that actually. But yeah, that's obviously close by to the race. This race is in the Alps region in the south east of France. Okay. GC now. Vingegaard 1:10 ahead of O'Connor, who stays in second. Alaphilippe still in third, but not for long. Yates in fourth on 126, Groschartner still in fifth on 127. Hindley, Haig move up four spots on 137, 144. Danny Martinez on 207. Guillaume Martin rounds out the top 10 with Bjerg holding ninth for now. A question on Prime Alaphilippe, Angie. I haven't seen the... does like Imola Alaphilippe follow Vingegaard here?
Yeah, of course. 100%.
You reckon?
I believe he does.
I don't think so.
I believe Prime Alaphilippe does, but Prime Alaphilippe is only the ones that we saw at the ultra top, at Imola, at the top.
Mm.
I think that would work. But maybe that only works when it comes to Alaphilippe, because that stage is also 260 kilometers compared to a stage like this, which isn't that hard. So maybe a Vingegaard would suffer more on a longer stage like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not as certain as I was 15 seconds ago, but
if it was 5 minutes or 6 minutes, I would 100% agree. No, when it stretches out above 8 minutes, I'm like, I don't know. Anyway, I think he's not in bad shape. Getting dropped like that by Vingegaard's no shame. And in fact, he decided, I'm going to blow up if I follow these two guys. And he paced a little bit smarter maybe than Carapaz. Anyway, tomorrow's stage is another sort of puncher fest from Nantua to Crevoland. This is around the south of Geneva. It actually skirts Annecy, Lake Annecy, and goes just to the right of it. It's medium mountain up and down. I'm assuming there's a lot of accumulated climbing in the first 140 Ks, none of it particularly steep. Then they do the Col des Arrivées, which is 7.5 kilometers at 6%, a category 2, just a bit of a warm-up. That shouldn't be scaring too many people. It's not that difficult. And then there's the descent, and then two climbs, kind of, it's like the Gudu one against Van Aert. Similar. This is the same sort of finish they're trying to look for here. And it's two climbs. The first one, the profile's mucking up for me. What's the finish? The first one's not as hard. 3.2K, 6.5%, and then 2.4Ks at 7%. This looks a lot more like Alaphilippe territory, and I think he wins this stage, Benji, because the first 600 meters are super hard of the final, 14%. But then the last 600 meters are 2%. So if there's a group, it's a flat sprint, and his flat sprint looks the quickest out of all these guys. So yeah, I'm going with Alaphilippe again.
That's so boring.
I want someone
else on the paper here.
Jaguar
de Tulcan will definitely be competing. That is our boy Carapaz. He was close on the last sprint that Alaphilippe won. I'm scrolling through the start list. Like, we would have seen Van Gils again on this terrain. Like, I'm really sad that he's out of this race.
I know, the two stages that really suited him.
I was so hyped to see what he could do on this terrain, but I guess we won't see it. And when I look at any other teams, I'm like, Sean Quinn once again, next to Carapaz in the same camp of Via Vacation first, but they are clearly picking Carapaz. They're clearly picking Carapaz over Quinn on this terrain, this race anyway. Godu will be sprinting for it, but he doesn't
get dropped, dude.
Yeah.
Lenny will sprint for it.
Lenny Martinez won't win, though.
No, probably not.
What's up with Martinez?
I don't know. I've been asking that question for 4 months. Last spring he won Pays Vasco in really, really impressive fashion. He fourth in Liège or third in Liège. He was very, very punchy. I don't know. Now, maybe he's been sick. Maybe he crashed. Maybe he had personal problems. Maybe he's just had a form issue. Maybe he signed a contract somewhere else and he's not trying as hard. These things, you know, cycling, it's impossible to know, and there's usually an explanation for things, or maybe he just, I don't know. But yeah, because it's not like, oh, he got dropped by Vingegaard, he's so bad. It's like, no, he's getting dropped by all the other guys he was on the level of last year in 1 week. Like he's getting dropped by Benoit on a climb. So I don't know.
No, Alaphilippe doesn't win. It's former enemy time.
Johannesson.
Yeah, former enemy wins.
Nah.
Well, with my luck, he's gonna DNS tomorrow, because yesterday I said Van Hills.
Yeah, who else is punchy? Ciccone. Ciccone's nice.
Yeah.
Hindley's got a decent enough sprint, but it's flat. I have to go with Jala. I'm afraid. Alrighty. Otherwise, we just watched before we started recording the ZLM tour and stage one after the prologue. We wouldn't normally cover it, but Tour de Tietema actually held off with Jentel van der Velde.
Yeah.
They held off a peloton led by Jumbo Visma and DSM, which was impressive stuff. It's probably the biggest stage race in the Netherlands, 2.pro, the ZLM Tour. So it's the biggest stage, yes, because Amstel's the biggest race in the Netherlands. But
yeah, because Benelux Tour we count as Belgian, right?
Nah, yeah, that's not. Come on.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, my friend.
Yeah.
But yeah, Welsford's strongest in the peloton, but Coy gave up. So I don't know. I want to see a head-to-head between Coy and Welsford there.
Yeah. Sprinter, we already discussed the sprinter musical chairs. Anyway, that's all the news we've got, I think, for cycling at the moment. the Giro U23 starts this week.
Mate, Giro next gen, my friend.
Yeah, well, the RCS have taken over it, so it's now owned or managed or produced by RCS. So whether that's an upgrade or not, I don't know. But yeah, I'm looking at Luke Lamperti, he's a sprinter there on Trinity. There's some also obviously some other good riders. So yeah, we'll be back tomorrow for the punchy finish. We've been watching the Tour de France Unchained Netflix series, and we'll have the recap of that on Monday as well. But first, Dauphiné Stage 6 tomorrow. Till then, ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.